Yud Sivan, Sunday the 8th of June, Rabbi Alex Schutz, Biblical Astronomy.
I'm going to explain some of the terms that we're familiar with, how exactly they're defined, and with that we'll be able to understand some of the concepts mentioned in the Gemara and in the Chumash and Rashi. You know there's such a thing as a year, a day, and a month, but exactly what the explanation, what does a year mean and what does a day mean, there are different ways of defining it, and there are actually different amounts of time. The first way to measure a year is a sidereal year. That's based on the orbit of the Earth around the Sun throughout the year. It puts the Sun in an apparent different position in the stars. Of course, we can't see the stars during the day. They're behind the Sun. The stars are extremely far from us, whereas the Sun is close. As the Earth orbits the Sun, the apparent position in the stars changes throughout the year. Each month travels approximately 30 degrees, 360 degrees in the year and the 12 months, putting it in a different constellation. There are approximately 6,000 stars visible to the naked eye, and they are arranged in groups of constellations, 56 constellations, throughout the entire celestial sphere in every direction. The ones we're concerned with are the 12 that are in the plane of the orbit of the Earth around the Sun. In that orbit, there are 12 groups. That's the Galgal HaMazalos. In the English, it's called the ecliptic. That is the plane of the Earth's orbit around the Sun.
That large white circle. The large white circle.
The red one.
Yeah, the white one.
The white one is actually the plane of the Earth's equator. It's tilted to that. We'll get to that. One year is one full orbit of the Earth around the Sun through the stars, putting it in the same group that it started at. That's one way of measuring a year. It's a sidereal year. It's not the way we measure our years. It's very close. In the olden times, they didn't have any form of entertainment at night. They'd go out and look at the stars, and using their imagination, they saw groups of animals or pictures of the stars, and those form the constellations. Those are the Yud Beis Mazalos, the Galgal HaMazalos. Another way of measuring a year is an anomalistic year. The Sun is not at the center of the orbit. It's an elliptical orbit, putting the Earth further from the Sun in the beginning of July and closer to the Sun in January. So throughout the year, the distance from the Sun changes. There's a time we're furthest from the Sun and a time we're closest to the Sun. The Rambam actually calls the time when we're furthest from the Sun Makom Goiva HaShemesh, when the Sun is highest off the Earth. The Chazal always pictured it that the Earth is the center and everything else moves around that. So therefore the Sun is highest from the Earth at the Makom Goiva HaShemesh, and that's a certain point in the orbit. So that's another way to measure a year, also not the way we measure our years. Now it's important to note that the speed of the movement changes throughout the year because it's a orbit, the gravitational pull changes. The further we are from something, the less gravitational pull. Therefore, the speed slows down in the summer, and it speeds up in the winter. The winter is actually shorter than the summer in actual time. So that's the second way to measure a year, also not the way we measure our years. But it's very important for knowing the moon cycle around the Earth. We'll get to that soon, hopefully. A third way to measure a year is the tropical year. There's a reason that they actually make the globe on a tilt. As the globe orbits the Sun, as the Earth orbits the Sun, it's spinning on its axis, creating day and night. The spin of the Earth creates the latitude lines, the equator in the center, and the North and South Pole. Because the Earth spins, we have the poles and the latitude lines. That's the entire spin is at a tilt to the ecliptic. The Galgal HaMazalos is the plane of the Earth's orbit around the Sun, and the Earth is tilted to that plane. At one point during the year, the North Pole is facing towards the Sun. As the Earth continues its orbit, the Sun is directly over the equator. It continues further along, and then the South Pole is more tilted, inclined toward the Sun. So that creates the four seasons of the year. This is actually the way we measure our years. It's 365 and a quarter days, but it's slightly less than a quarter. This is the summer for the northern hemisphere when the north is tilted toward the sun. as the earth makes its way around the sun crosses the equator into Kufas Tishrei, heading south for the winter. Then the southern hemisphere is tilted toward the sun. Northern hemisphere has winter, they have the summer in the south. And it continues until Kufas Nisan in the spring, when once again the sun is directly over the equator and it's going north for the summer. So those are the four Tukufas of the year. In a year there are no months. It's a very repetitive cycle. The Lashon of Shana is because of a repetition. So it does the same thing over and over again. That's the Ebenezer says that's what the word comes from, Shana. Now, the average, if you take the 365 and a quarter days and split it into four, so you're going to have an average Tukufa of 91 days and 7.5 hours. That's what Shmuel averages it out in Maseches Eruvin. However, that's a very long time, right? So they know that the ancient people knew that the moon orbited the earth approximately 12 times as the earth went one orbit around the sun. Therefore, to wait 91 and a half days for your next paycheck is too long. So they split it into thirds. Split every tekufa into three parts. And they called it a month. A month based on these seasons, has nothing to do with the moon. They just split it that way because they knew that they were approximately the same amount of time. So this is Tukubas Tevis when the earth is tilted away from the sun. Northern hemisphere is tilted away, our winter. 30 days after that will be Tukufas Shvat, Shvat of the Tukufa, not of the months, but of the Tukufa, of the seasons. And then 30 days after that will be Tukufas Adar. The Adar month based on the Tukufa, where the earth is in its orbit around the sun. Now the Gemara has a shaila in Maseches Rosh Hashanah. It asks, we know there's a din of Tu B'Shvat that the trees have a new cycle with the fruits, the Trumas and Maisris. That begins the year. If the Chanata of the fruit, the budding and the blossoming of the flowers happens after Tu B'Shvat, so it's on the following year's Cheshbon, and on the Trumas and Maisris go for the following year. And if it's before Tu B'Shvat, it's the previous year. So the Gemara has a shaila. How do we measure Shvat? Do we use Shvat of the months, of the lunar cycle? Or do we have the Shvat of the Tekufa, where it would be 40 days after Tevis, after the first day of Tekufa's Tevis, 40 days later would be Tu B'Shvat? The Gemara doesn't have this question about any other of the Yomim Tovim. It's Pashut, that it's very simple that we go with what it says in the Torah. Says the date of the month, and we use the lunar cycle. However, with Tu B'Shvat, the Gemara entertains at least an idea. Maybe we should use Shvat of the Tekufa. Why is that? Well, this cycle, this creates our seasons. The seasons create the rain. The rainy season is based on the orbit of the earth around the sun, not of the moon around the earth. Therefore, maybe we should use this, because the idea of Tu B'Shvat is that's when most of the rain came for the season. Therefore, the new fruit is coming from the sap in the tree that's coming from that year's rain. So, being it's a seasonal phenomena that we're experiencing that creates Tu B'Shvat, maybe it should be based on the seasons and not the months of the year, based on the moon. Nonetheless, the Gemara says we use the moon, we don't use the seasons, because the lunar cycle is adjusted enough that it will be close enough for the season. Tosfos says also some things are affected by the moon, the lunar cycle, and all the Yomim Tovim use the moon, so that's what we use. We use the moon. Now there is, the same Talmud Matar is based on the solar cycle only. It's at 60 days after Tekufas Tishrei, in Chutz Lartz, we start saying the same Talmud Matar. That's 60 days after the Kufas Tishrei, and it's based solely on the solar cycle, because that's a phenomena that's also due to the seasons, where we start praying for the rain in the rainy season. And Birchas HaChama is also based on the Tekufas, nothing to do with the moon. It could sometimes happen before Pesach, sometimes it could happen after Pesach. Nothing to do with the lunar cycle, it's only based on this, on the solar cycle and the Tekufas. This is the way we measure our years. It's slightly less than 365 and a quarter days. The Tekufa Shmuel rounded it out to 365 and a quarter. The Ebenezer says that Shmuel knew that this was not an exact number. In the days of the Ebenezer, he writes that it was already 9 days off. In the 1500s, Pope Gregory adjusted the calendar. Until then, they were using the Julian calendar, which is exactly the same as Tekufa Shmuel. When Pope Gregory realized how far off it was, he adjusted it, and he took 11 days out of the year. He pushed the calendar 11 days forward, and instead of having a leap year every 4 years for the quarter day, since it was slightly less, he took out 3 leap years in 400 years. There are only 97 leap years in 400 years in the Gregorian calendar, which is in use today. It was adopted in most of Europe in the 1500s. The Americas adopted it in the 1700s. And Russia, about 100 years ago, started using the Gregorian calendar. And that's what's in use today. Therefore, the dates do not correspond with the Julian calendar, which is what we use, Tekufa Shmuel, and it's slightly off. That's why some people have Nitl Nach on the December 25th, and some do it January 6th, because of the difference between the Gregorian calendar and the Julian calendar. Those are the three ways to measure a year. Now, a day is one rotation of the Earth on its axis. So if you go out at night, take any star on the meridian, the meridian is the line that you would draw directly overhead through the poles. If you take any star as it crosses the meridian and then measure till the next night when it once again crosses the meridian, that would be one full rotation of the Earth. That's 23 hours and 56 minutes and a few seconds. Now, we know that we have 24-hour days, so how does that fit in? Well, as the Earth is spinning, it's also orbiting the Sun. So it's true relative to the stars, which are distant and have no movement, no apparent movement, the Earth has made one complete rotation. However, since it's moved approximately 1 degree around the Sun, it now has to make up. Relative to the Sun, it has not yet completed a full rotation, since its orbit around the Sun took it 1 degree further along. It does 360 degrees in the year, 365 days. It's almost 1 degree a day. So how much longer will the day be to make up 1 degree? Well, the Earth spins in 24 hours, 360 degrees. That's 15 degrees an hour. That's 1 degree every 4 minutes. So therefore, it's an extra 4 minutes to make up for the 1 degree of the Earth's orbit around the Sun. So there are two ways to measure a day. Now, a day has four points that are very important to us. Just like the year is divided into four seasons, the day is divided into four parts. One, Chatzos HaYom, which is directly opposite the Sun. Chatzos HaLaila is going to be the opposite side of the globe, directly opposite Chatzos HaYom. Then one line of Zricha, sunrise, and one line of sunset on the opposite side. So those are the four points that the day could be divided into. After that, they divide them into subsections of hours and minutes. Rashi in Chumash says that Pesach is called Pesach because Hashem jumped over the houses of the Yidden when he killed the Egyptians. The Jews were spared. It was a sequential death. First one Mitzri died, then Hashem jumped over the next house and killed the Mitzri in the following house. They were living side by side. Yet we know in the Chumash it says they died all at Chatzos Laila, which is instantaneous. They should have all been at exactly the same time. So how does it fit in with a sequential death if they all died at Chatzos? So the answer I heard from Rav Shlomo Miller, and the Maharil Diskin says the same answer. Actually, as the globe turns, the line of Chatzos moves from east to west. So the plague, the Makas Bechor, started at the eastern side of Mitzrayim, and as the globe turned, it moved further west. So there was a sequential death. However, each Bechor died at exactly Chatzos, his personal Chatzos, which is where the line of the Chatzos was opposite the line of the sun. So they're both true. They died a sequential death exactly at Chatzos, each person. We have three ways of measuring a year and two ways of measuring a day. Now with the moon, it gets a little bit more complicated. In addition to the three ways we had of measuring a year, we have those same three ways of measuring a month. We have a sidereal month when the moon is in the same position relative to the backdrop of the stars. We have the anomalistic month, that's the moon's elliptical orbit when it comes closer to Earth, and then that's perigee, it's close to Earth. And then apogee when it's further away from Earth. So two ways of measuring, that's the second way of measuring a year. And that speed also changes drastically from when it's close to when it's further away. the orbit of the moon around the earth is actually more elliptical than that of the earth around the sun. Therefore, the moon's speed varies more throughout the month than the earth's speed varies throughout the year. That's the second way of measuring a year. Tropical year is when the moon gets to its same place relative to the axis of the earth. That's the third way. Those are three ways of measuring a year.
A month.
Now, there's two additional ways of measuring a month. And there's a draconic month. We know that the moon goes around the earth once a month, and the sun appears to go around the earth once a year. It's apparent motion through the ecliptic, through the Galgala Mazalos. What the moon does in a month, the sun does in a year. So the moon is much faster. Now, if it were exactly on the same plane as the ecliptic, we would have an eclipse twice a year, twice a month. Once, when the moon would pass between the earth and the sun, it would cast its shadow on the earth, blocking out the sun for whoever's in the shadow. And then there would be another eclipse half a month later when it would pass through the earth's shadow, blocking out the sunlight from reaching the moon. If it were exactly on the same plane. However, the moon's plane of orbit is inclined to that of the sun. It's not at the same plane, so therefore every month it actually goes north of the ecliptic, heads 5 degrees north, and then comes south of the ecliptic, 5 degrees south, and it does that every month. So if it's actually crossing the ecliptic at the time of the Moilad, or at the time of Nigud, at the time of conjunction, or at the time of opposition, then there will be an eclipse of the sun or of the moon. But most months it's going to be either too far north or too far south of that point, and there is no eclipse. An eclipse happens approximately twice a year. There's actually a series of eclipses that happens over the course of the 18 years and 11 days, and it repeats itself. So those are that's the fourth way of measuring a month. Now, none of those months are the way we measure our month. Those months are all 27 and a half days, or 27 and a third days, 27 and a fifth days. There are slightly more than 27 days. The way we measure our months is the synodic month. Why is our month two days longer? Well, just like we said with the date, the earth has moved as it's spinning. It moved 1 degree around the sun, therefore makes the solar day longer than the sidereal day by 4 minutes. The same is true with the month. As the moon orbits the earth, it eventually gets to a point where it's a new moon, a molad. That's the new moon, the molad. Now, it will get to the same spot relative to the stars, the backdrop of the stars, the same angle, after 27 and a third days. However, it did not completely orbit to be in line with the sun again. It will take another 2 days, and then that's the next month. That's the month that we measure, the synodic month, when the moon completes its cycle relative to the sun. And that's very important, because this makes the months change in actual length. Not all months are 29 and a half days and 44 minutes. That's an average time. The actual month will vary greatly by several hours, either longer or shorter. And that's dependent on where the moon is in its cycle when it has to make up these 2 days. If the moon is close to Earth, it's moving quickly. If the moon is further away from the Earth, it's moving slowly. The gravitational pull is stronger when it's close, and it's weaker when it's far away. So it pulls it faster when it's close. Therefore, the length of the month changes from molad to molad, depending on where in the orbit the moon is. That's, according to the Ibn Ezra and the Baal HaMor, that's the Pshat in the Gemara, when the Gemara says, Pamim ba bederech kutzara, pamim ba bederech harucha. They had a Gemara in Daf Yomi just last week that says sometimes the moon takes a short path and sometimes it takes a long path. So there was a machloikus in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan felt that the average month did not allow for a viewing of the moon by the witnesses that evening. And Rabbi Gamliel says, well, I have a Kabbalah for my family, for my ancestors, that the months are not the same. If it's a short month, then there's a greater chance of seeing the new moon on the 30th day, because the month was shorter, the Moilad was earlier. Therefore, by the time the Edim had a chance to see the moon the next evening, there was already a sufficient elongation of the moon past the sun, and it was visible. Whereas if it was a long month, then the Moilad was later, and the Edom would not have been able to see the new moon. Now, This is also very...
You said that the sun, you said the earth spins when it goes around the sun. Does the moon spin when it goes around the earth?
The moon actually spins, but it has no consequence l'halacha or in any Gemara. Its spin is synacrosis with its orbits, which means the same side of the moon always faces Earth.
There's no halachic difference.
No, that has no halachic difference.
It does, that.
It does spin the same rate as the orbit. So we only see 59% of the moon from Earth because of its elliptical orbit. Sometimes we see the actual face changes, wobbles slightly because of its orbit, but 41% is never visible from Earth.
So it doesn't spin 360 degrees then?
It spins 360 degrees the same time as it orbits 360 degrees. So the same face of the moon always faces Earth. This is not really pertinent to any Gemara, so I don't usually touch on it.
So the moon doesn't spin all the way around, otherwise yes, you would be able to see the other side.
It spins all the way around, but it does it synacrosis with its orbit. So it keeps the same face facing Earth. Now this is also important for the nigud, for the opposition of the moon. Just like you said, the moilad varies in time, so the opposition will also vary. The full moon on the opposite side of Earth will also vary in time from when it's finished its orbit relative to the stars till it finishes its orbit to become full again. Which will mean the time of Sov Zman Kiddush Levana should vary. Why is that? Well, Sov Zman Kiddush Levana is based on the phases of the moon. The new moon, at the time of the new moon, the moon is directly between the earth and the sun. It might be north or south. If there's no eclipse, it's either to the north or to the south. Otherwise, it's in line with the earth and the sun. At that point, nothing can be seen from earth. The bright side is facing the sun. All you see is the dark side. You can't see the dark side when it's next to the sun, so you see nothing. At that point, that's the moilad, when it starts growing in size. It starts growing in size as it continues its orbit around the earth. After it's sufficiently far from the sun, you'll eventually be able to see a thin sliver of the moon shortly after Shkia. Now, not everyone on earth will be able to see it. Anyone who's on the side of earth which has in the day won't be able to see it. The brightness of the sun blinds them. Anyone who's on the opposite side of the earth won't be able to see it, because the moon will be on one side, and they're on the other side of the globe. So the moon's not in their sky. So anyone, either during the day or during the night, will not be able to see it. The only ones that will be able to see it is the line of Shkia, the line where they're having sunset. So right after the sun sets, so the thin crescent will be in the sky in the west, and they'll be able to see a thin crescent shortly after sunset, close to where the sun is setting, because it's approximately 12 degrees after the sun. Both the Baal HaMor and the Rambam say that the day before and after the Moilad, the moon cannot be seen. 24 hours before the Moilad and 24 hours after, in general, the moon cannot be seen. Rashi and Tosfos learn a shorter time, 6 hours, but the Metzias, in actuality, it can't be seen for at least 18 hours, according to the Rambam. There is a world, the Rambam makes his calculations in the area of Eretz Yisrael, in the latitude of Eretz Yisrael, and the longitude around Eretz Yisrael. There is a world record of a sighting of 14 hours, but I don't know where that happened. I assume that it was not in Eretz Yisrael. But no one has ever spotted it at 6 hours like Rashi and Tosfos. That has not happened yet. With a telescope, it is possible, but not with the naked eye. So, shortly after that, the moon grows till it's a quarter of the month passed, and you see half of the disk of the moon. Half of the light, you see half of the lighted side, and then it continues growing till it's directly opposite the sun, on the opposite side, a full moon. Kiddush Levana can be said as long as the moon is still growing. Once the moon has reached opposition, then it's no longer growing. It starts getting smaller after that. On a waning moon, we don't say Kiddush Levana. We say Kiddush Levana on a waxing moon. So that being the case, we take the average month, split the time in half. The Rama says after 14 days and 14 and 3/4 days after the Moilad, you can no longer say Kiddush Levana, because after that it's growing smaller. The Beis Yosef says, the Mechaber says 15 days, he just rounds it off to 15 days. Now the Beis Yosef says that if there's an eclipse of the moon, so you know that the moon is no longer getting larger, it's getting smaller, because an eclipse is a sign of opposition. Once the moon has gone halfway around, it's in the shadow of the earth, after that it will start getting smaller. Therefore the Beis Yosef says, after an eclipse of the moon, you can no longer say Kiddush Levana. There's actually another sign of opposition mentioned in the Gemara. It doesn't call it opposition, but that's what the Gemara is referring to. There's a halacha, the sailors on the sea have no way of knowing when Beis Din proclaimed Rosh Chodesh. How are they going to know what day to keep Pesach, to stop eating chametz, to get rid of their chametz? So the Gemara says, on the 14th of the month, they have to get rid of their chametz like everyone else in the world. How do they know what day is the 14th of the month? Be your chametz. So they look. The sailors on the ocean have a clear view of the horizon 180 degrees in every direction. If they see at sunrise that the moon is setting, that is a siman, that's indicative of the fact that they're 180 degrees apart. One is on one end of the horizon, the moon is on the opposite end of the horizon. The sun is rising and the moon is setting. So they know that it's the 14th of the month, and they have to get rid of their chametz. Why is it the 14th? Well, the moilad cannot be seen. The Edom come a day after the moilad. That's the first of the month. 14 days later will be the 15th of the month. That's the middle of the month. That's the 14th of the month. And they have to get rid of their chametz. So that's another indication that the moilad actually, that the nigud, the opposition actually happened, and Kiddush Levana could no longer be cited. Now, if you don't have a eclipse of the moon, so you can rely on the average times. The Chassam Sofer says that you could actually save Kiddush Levana even on the 16th because you cannot discern anything missing in the moon. The Yad Ramah also in Sanhedrin says the 16th of the moon, until you see a missing portion of the moon, you could say Kiddush Levana. But that's all if you don't know that it's actually getting smaller. You haven't seen a sign of opposition. There's a story in the youngest partisan. He was in Russia fighting the Nazis in the end of World War II, 1944. And he knew it was Nisan, and he wanted not to eat chametz on Pesach. He was with a bunch of goyim there, the Russian partisans. And he looked at the moon to know it was the 15th of the month. He saw that it was a full moon. Okay, so 8 days, he won't eat chametz. No problem. The problem was, next night he went out again and looked at the moon, and it still looks full. So maybe he was a day off. He figured, maybe I made a mistake. Okay, so I'll keep Pesach an extra day. The third night he went out and he looked at the moon, and it still appeared full. It was hard to see anything missing in it. So, okay. So that year he ended up keeping Pesach 12 days. So it's obviously true that you cannot discern the little minute part that's missing in the moon. However, had he known what the Gemara says, to climb up on a mountain with a clear view of the horizon, he'd have known when opposition occurred, and that would have been a much, much stronger way of knowing the actual date than just trying to figure it out by looking at the size of the moon. Therefore, every month opposition happens, and there is a line on Earth that can see the sun rising when the moon is setting. Since that's possible to be seen somewhere in the world every month, so then true opposition is something that can be seen physically with the naked eye. Therefore, even though Chazal said, you use half the month when you don't know, but being that nowadays it's easily discernible to the naked eye, and we have communication to be told about it from somewhere else. If somebody calls in Eretz Yisrael and says, we just saw the lunar eclipse, it would seem to me that it's simple. You can't say Kiddush Levana anywhere in the world. It happened already. That's now getting smaller, and you have information to that effect. So the same would be true if somebody saw opposition on the ocean, a boat saw opposition, the sun rising and the moon setting. That would also be indicative of the end of the Zman for Kiddush Levana, and therefore, Lechachila, one should not say Kiddush Levana after true opposition. In my Kuntres, I wrote this Sov Zman Kiddush Levana with true opposition. Some of the papers actually do print it. The Yateid Naman, I believe, prints it now, and it is available. Nowadays, my kids would just ask your telephone, what time is opposition this month, and it answers. I don't know how to do all that, but it's readily available. Therefore, I did ask Rav Shlomo Miller in Toronto, and he said, L'chadchila, one should be makbid on the Sov Zman Kiddush Levana with true opposition. I think one could even use it L'kula, and rely on it to say it after the Zman if he knows that opposition did not yet happen because the moon is still growing. And he could rely on that, especially with the Tzir, joining with the Yad Ramah, who says you can't see any Chisaron, there's nothing lacking in the moon, therefore Kiddush Levana could still be said if you know that opposition did not happen. I think we're out of time. We have more time? Okay, I have a lot more, so if anyone's interested in either arranging another shir or coming to the back and asking, I can...
Very good.